All right, welcome back to another edition of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Sports Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Be sure to throw me a follow on Twitter, at Zach_Goodall. You can follow my co-host, at Misto Cristofo. We know it's hard to type. We were on a guest on a podcast last week, and they pretty much said, listen, we're not going to try and even say what your handle is. You can just do it yourself. But that is Misto Cristofo. On Twitter, Chris Thornton. Chris, say what's up to the people.
Listen, I've been thinking about maybe changing the username, but I feel like it's like changing my legacy at that point. It's like, I don't know.
You have no legacy, Chris.
But I can't give it up. That's like my username on everything. I've thought about
it. Well, you can keep it on everything. Locked On Chris. Locked On Chris. Okay. That sounds even worse.
Yeah, so Mr. Christopher.
Mr. Cristofo, it is. Well, we are going to be continuing our Locked On NFL crossover series covering every NFL team heading into training camp. And as it is the dead part of the offseason, trying to get as much content out there as we can. And we've done the Texans. We've done the Titans. We are now on to everyone's least favorite AFC South team, and that is the Indianapolis Colts. We are joined by my buddy Brian, who you can follow on Twitter at BrianKroski19. Brian, as I say to Chris every show and he gets tired of it, say what's up to the people.
All right, before I do that, two things. One, when you said least favorite, I thought you were going to say your least favorite Colts tweeter, because that's literally my bio. So I thought you were stealing with that, because there's not many good people on Colts Twitter, so you got one of the worst, so congratulations. Kroski, not Kroski, but that's all right.
Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. It's 2018. I should be better at this. And yes, that was a play on your bio. I thought I could get a little creative there. But so we'll go ahead and get right into it, covering the Colts, their offseason, looking forward to the future, kind of the same mold as we've had the past couple of shows. Mm-hmm. And it started with the firing of Chuck Pagano. That was pretty expected. It's kind of been expected for like 3 years, and it finally happened. There was a little bit of drama there. I know we're not going to say his name. but if you want to just kind of walk us through the whole process of everything happening to Pagano, to the whole scandal, your feelings on he who must not be named, and then the official Colts hiring in Frank Reich.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago when both Pagano and Grigson's contracts were up, we thought, I mean, it seemed like one of them was going to go. And this was kind of, I don't know if it was a hot take, but I would have rather kept Grigson than Pagano, because I felt Grigson, although every single one of his picks was bad, I felt like he was at least good players, and that I thought it was more of a coaching issue. So I actually wanted, it's kind of a hot take, I wanted Grigson over Pagano, but obviously I would have been fine with neither. But instead we got both. And so obviously now we got Daddy Ballard running the show, and everyone knew Pagano was gone after this year. And so yeah, Josh McDaniels, who is a snake, people forget that, and will never get another head coaching job that isn't for the New England Patriots ever, because he's a snake and cannot be trusted. I'm sure he's happy, you know, sitting in the doghouse outside in New England, Foxborough, New England right now, taking Bill Belichick's orders. But, you know, that's fine. Frank Reich's an awesome hire. He wasn't the top option. I think it's kind of interesting that he wasn't even willing to take any offers while he was leading his team, or leading an offense to a Super Bowl. So that's pretty cool. Seems like a great guy. Him and Ballard got along nicely. And there's a lot that we can take away from the things that were implemented. I mean, you can take away a lot, but it's tough because everyone knows how good like the coaching was at Philadelphia. So like with their head coach, and then, you know, Reich was the offensive coordinator, you know, everyone ranted and raved about John DeFilippo as well. So like, you don't know exactly where he had his hand in the pot that was the Eagles offense, but he's the offensive coordinator, so you know he had a lot to do. And you know, many of the players, you hear them talk about the aggressiveness and the kind of style that he had that he's hopefully bringing to Indianapolis. So that's good. And one more thing, Josh McDaniels is a snake and will never be on any other team other than ever again.
Is he the Kevin Durant of football coaches in the NFL?
So much worse. Like, no other team will ever hire him for that. Like, they had the press conference announced.
Yeah.
They had the tweets. Yeah, they had the tweets out there.
Social media account was shook.
I think I tweeted at least 120 times like that night, and the news broke at like 7 o'clock like Eastern time, and like I sent at least 100 tweets that night, and like the snake emoji is still like in the most used tweets on my phone. I haven't used this in like months.
And
now, oh, go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say you said he's in the doghouse. I guess he's kind of in two doghouses because I mean they did lose to the underdog Eagles. So
he's in 31 dog. He's in every doghouse of every team because he's not even. He's in the doghouse of Bill Belichick with the Patriots, and he's not getting any looks from anyone else. So,
well, I just can't wait to see that organization crumble under McDaniels because I don't like McDaniels anyway. People talked him up to Jacksonville a year ago, and I hated that talk.
I was fine with him leading a great offense, but I think he's less of – I mean, I was willing to, you know, dismiss all the Denver stuff, but, I mean, after this, everyone kind of knows the true character that he is.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we mentioned Reich. You talked about him a little bit. I'm curious – now, obviously, the Colts offense is going to revolve around Andrew Luck if he can ever throw a football again. That's a discussion for later, but just getting the idea of Andrew Luck out of there in terms of looking at how the offense is going to change with him in house. And you said, you know, we can't really be sure exactly what he wants to run because there was so much different offensive mastermind in Philadelphia, but what's the feeling that Indianapolis is getting in terms of what type of offense he's going to try and run?
Well, the one thing that I did, especially after the Colts draft this year, is I went back and looked at, you know, the Eagles, what they did at running back, kind of with a three-headed monster with Blunt, Clement, and Ajayi. You know, even Wentz rush and, you know, Luck, maybe even Luck can't throw. He'll just run a lot. But they had five running backs with nearly 50 carries. So it's kind of that committee thing. And so you think about Marlon Mack, and I'm the biggest Marlon Mack fan in the world. And then two day three picks of Nyheim Hines out of North Carolina State and Jordan Wilkins out of Ole Miss in the SEC. And then they still have Robert Turbin. So, I mean, the jokes are kind of there for Robert Turbin himself. But he's one of the most efficient third down runners and red zone runners in the NFL. So if he's your third or fourth running back, what you can take away from this draft compared to what Reich had in Philadelphia is that every running back has their own niche and has their own role. And so, I mean, it's good that they'll put their players in positions to succeed. But then it's also tough because defenses – can, you know, easily game plan with certain packages that they see on the field. You know, if you know certain running backs and tendencies, you know, will kind of create mismatches and then they'll be able to adjust to those. So, I mean, that's kind of the worrisome thing that, you know, they have three day three running backs that are all going to be splitting carries. But I'm really excited about Reich being able to use that. And the fact that they have so many running backs, you know, tight ends, they Jack Doyle, many people don't know about him, but, I mean, he's a pro bowler. He's just a ridiculously solid tight end. And Eric Ebron, who they've gotten. So you see this offense going from, you know, you still have T.Y. Hilton, but after T.Y. Hilton, this wide receiver depth is really poor. So this is going to be a very running back and tight end focused passing offense.
And you bring up Eric Ebron, who really seems to be the only haul from the Colts in free agency when I feel like they probably could have spent a little more. They had a decent amount of cap room, I believe like over $50 million, and they really come out with Eric Ebron and I guess Ryan Grant as your premier players. So just kind of talk us through a little bit and what you think maybe their goal was there.
Well, in 2014, Andrew Luck had his best season, led the Colts to an AFC championship game with T.Y. Hilton, Hakeem Nicks, Reggie Wayne on a torn ACL, and Kobe Fleener, who was the worst tight end in the league. So if you think – if you can upgrade from that and saw what Luck was throwing for 40 touchdowns and less than one interception a game, you know, you kind of really don't need to put, you know, $16 million wide receivers around him. And, you know, sure, Allen Robinson would have been nice – or, you know, one of those other players. And it's not that you don't want to surround your quarterback with talents. Obviously, you do. But the opportunity cost that you'd be adding, you know, a player like that versus, you know, other holes that you could fill is just kind of – he's shown how much he can carry. And it's not that you want to, you know, have him have to carry the team again. But, listen, if you get Ryan Grant, Chester Rogers, T.Y. Hilton, with two solid tight ends and three running backs with an improved offensive line, you know, the offense will be fine. Plus with a, you know, an amazing offensive line, Frank Reich.
Mm-hmm. Now with Ebron in house, and you already mentioned Jack Doyle, who is underrated to a lot of people, but I had him on several of my fantasy teams this past year. But how are they going to look to incorporate both of those guys? With Ebron, obviously didn't work out to the potential people expect out of him in Detroit, but how do you think they're going to try and factor both of those guys into the offense?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the types of personnel. I mean, Colts, when like at their full strength, they're just the mostly 11 personnel, you know, with the one tight end that usually was Dwayne Allen or usually was Jack Doyle, but a little more 21 personnel, you know, tight ends, and Ebron's athletic as heck. He can, you know, stretch the field. I can't remember who it was for the Lions. Someone on Twitter just kind of went through and showed all the plays that he made down the field. And Jack Doyle is a great blocker, but he splits out wide a lot too. And they're kind of yin and yang when you talk about tight ends. And I mean, the fact that, you know, this offense has a lot of like potential and a lot of like players that do a lot of things well. You know, they're not great overall players, but they have certain styles that they perform well at. You think, well, like, Frank Reich is literally the embodiment of that. I mean, he turned Trey Burton, who, like, no one knew about, into, you know, the top tight end target on the free agent market this year. And he was, what, their second or third tight end? So, right. You know, the resurgence of Zach Ertz and all these other free agent wide receivers, or even, I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, what he did. And then Nelson Agholor, who everyone wrote off after a year or two, what he did. So you really have to be optimistic about what Frank Reich can do, you know, with these players and putting them in position to succeed. That's the most important part, is the well-roundedness of the offense may not perform up to its potential, but as long as you put them putting players in position to succeed, where you're strengthening their strengths, that's the most important part. And that's how you win in football, by strengthening your strengths.
Now, shifting from free agency to the draft, I believe that the Colts had a very underrated draft with their first few picks, because they picked a decent amount in the first two rounds. I thought the Colts had a pretty damn good draft. And, I mean, sixth overall, you guys pick a stud and a guard in Quentin Nelson, which instantly upgrades almost any offensive line in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And then you guys draft Darius Leonard in the second, which that's a guy I can't really say I'm too familiar with. And then you get one of my favorite guard prospects to go on the right side in Braden Smith. So just tell me how you felt about those picks, and then we can kind of go into the later rounds as well.
Yeah, I mean, Quentin Nelson, obviously, like, what else is there to say? I mean, that's just, you know, a slam dunk pick. It was Bradley Chubb no matter what. I didn't want Roquan Smith that high or any of those defensive backs. So very happy with Quentin Nelson at that pick. And then when they had those two back-to-back picks of Darius Leonard and Braden Smith, I think I was eerily familiar with Braden Smith, but like not too much. And the Darius Leonard pick really kind of threw me off, and I was pretty angry after it happened. And it's not that, you know, I've come to terms with it, or if I've had to, because I mean, he's going to be on the team, but I mean, it was a player they selected, you know, from South Carolina State. Apparently, he blew up at the Senior Bowl, which is good to know moving forward, and how Chris Ballard likes to scout players. And I know, like, I think last year against Clemson, he had like 20 tackles in one game. He was all over the field for what was a terrible defense. So, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Leonard pick. That's like a C pick to me. Braden Smith, thought he was a little overdrafted after going back and watching him, but he's going to compete with Jack Muhort, who is actually a really good guard. He just has terrible injury history. So, I mean, those two will compete for that right guard spot. And then they selected a pair of pass rushers, Kamoko Touré and Tyquan Lewis, at the end of the second round. And I don't think either of them will be starters, but if they're role players and they can, you know, find another, I mean, they still have Jabal Sheard, who is an underrated starter. And so, like I said, it kind of goes with the offense too, where I don't think the ceiling of this draft is very high, but if you put Tyquan Lewis and Kamoko Touré in positions where they can succeed and put them in the right packages and strengthen their strengths, then you're going to have a nice foundation. That's what this draft was, a very big foundation. They really only selected one playmaker, and it was Quentin Nelson. I'm perfectly fine with that.
And I mean, now, I was going to say they fortified the trenches, which is a very important part of football that I think a lot of people kind of overlook.
Yeah, and Ballard, I mean, he literally said that. People were so surprised with the picks, and like, Ballard may be the most open, honest, transparent GM in the entire league. Like, he literally tells you, he's like, we're looking for speed. and our linebackers, and he selects a speedy linebacker. He's like, we're looking to build our trenches, and he takes two offensive linemen and two pass rushers with his first four picks. Like, he's very transparent, and it's, I mean, it's kind of just good to be able to see that from him. And so, yeah, like I said, I think maybe only two of these draft picks from the whole draft will ever become, you know, full bona fide starters, but I think when you see the depth, I really think Frank Reich had a big deal with the players they were selecting and seeing exactly how Philadelphia formulated their team with how deep they were.
Now, it's totally okay that you guys didn't have a third round pick because, as mentioned before, you had five picks in the first two rounds. But yeah. Skipping over the third, you guys had a total of six picks between round four and round seven. Who are some of the guys? I know we already mentioned the running backs that came out of there, but that kind of stand out to you out of the later round picks in Hines, Darius Fountain, who I got to see at the Shrine game. And I can tell you that he is, I think he's going to be an underrated stud. Wilkins, Deion Kane, Matthew Adams, and Zaire Franklin.
Yeah, so the day three and even a couple of the undrafted free agents they got have like massive, massive upside of all the – even I like day three what the Colts did better than they did with either day one or day two. And that's a lot, seeing that they got Quentin Nelson and that they got four second-rounders. I think Hines and Wilkins are very good. Like, if you think about Corey and LeGarrette Blount, like, how much worse really is Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, and Jordan Wilkins? Like, LeGarrette Blount and Marlon Mack, you know, I know LeGarrette Blount is more experienced and he's shown what he can do, but Marlon Mack was second in the NFL in percentages of runs that went 20 yards or more. And Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins are both, or at least coming out of college, better than Corey Clement because they were drafted and Corey Clement wasn't. I know J.J. is a very good player too, but Hines is explosive as hell. Jordan Wilkins, I think, ran for 100 yards against every SEC team we faced in the last year. That includes Alabama, Georgia, stuff like that. And then you mentioned Darius Fountain, who was probably the biggest combine snub of the year, who actually tore it up at Northern Illinois. And then Deion Kane, who played great season. Had a great season 2 years ago with Deshaun Watson in Clemson. Even if one of those running back hits and one of those wide receiver hits, that's still two, you know, really valuable assets that the Colts did on offense. And I like the fact that they waited till day three to take offense because Andrew Luck can kind of prop anyone up to, you know, a higher value than what you selected them at. So lots of upside at the wide receiver position, and then some really good niche role players at running back.
Now, going into day three, I think you guys did really hit it out of the park with Nyheim Hines. I was a big fan. I was almost kind of hoping that the Jags would take him if he kind of fell into that range where he went. You guys ended up taking him, and I remember very distinctly in AT&T Stadium saying the Colts got a really good one, because I also liked Marlon Mack last year. So yeah. Getting those two guys in that backfield, I think, is going to be really fun, especially running behind Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith in that vastly improved O-line. The Colts are definitely building, I think, really a team of a lot of potential. It might take like a season or two for them to really get going, and I don't think really anybody's expecting the Colts to be competing for the division maybe this year, but if Andrew Luck can get healthy, and behind this O-line should definitely help, I think in the next two or three years, you might really have a really competitive division amongst all four teams.
Yeah, and that's one thing when I talk to people on Twitter about this is, like, the AFC South for a decade has been just an absolute awful division to watch. Like, it really is just – I mean, when people say it's the worst division, it is, because there's no rivalries. Like, at least two teams in every, you know, single division have like a good rivalry, and there really isn't one. So that's why I'm glad that, you know, hopefully Andrew Luck's getting healthy, and hopefully Marcus Mariota improves, and, you know, that the Titans improve, and Deshaun Watson comes back and plays like God, like he was, and hopefully the Jaguars, you know, I want that defense to remain as good as it is, and I want Jalen Ramsey to keep talking trash, because that makes the division so much better, and we're looking at four teams that could, I mean, all be within 8 to 10 wins next year.
I'm glad that you're encouraging Jalen Ramsey.
I love Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey is the best football player in the world. I don't care. I hope he keeps talking trash. I love it. I want to see him go against T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. will beat him, but we'll see.
I love nothing more than getting compliments from fellow AFC South fans on the king of the NFL. It really warms my heart because there are too many people out there that hate him.
I know.
It's sometimes unjustifiably. Like, he didn't even do that much against the Steelers in the playoff game, if I recall correctly. My family is full of Steelers fans. We win, and the first thing my brother says is, not good game, not I hate the Jaguars, it's I hate Jalen Ramsey. And I was like, oh, well, sorry that you don't have him, man.
That's exactly how I feel, yeah.
So that will take us kind of into previewing the season. And like we said before, this all kind of hinges right now on Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
What is the feel around the team? Because no one seems to really, I mean, they say he's coming along well, and then it's 500 days that he hasn't thrown a football. So, like, what's the feel? Like, what's the optimism level at? Like, A, on him coming back anytime soon, or if he doesn't, like, how far this team can continue to, you know, stay near the bottom of the NFL, unfortunately.
Yeah, just a quick remark. I know that number, like that 500-day number, I think the Sims and Lefko podcast tweeted that out. That's actually incorrect because, remember, he went back to a full throwing schedule when they were trying to bring him off IR. So, like, technically, right. Like, yes, he hasn't, like, an NFL game, but, I mean, you can slash that because, like, he was actually throwing real-life football. And I really don't pay much attention to, like, oh, he's throwing, you know, 80% of a football or anything like that. I mean, he lost a ton of weight when – if you know anyone on Colts Twitter, especially my boy James, if you follow him at JV3, like anytime Luck is in public, he's just taking screenshots of him and like zooming in on his pecs, his chest, and his ass, and just like we're falling in love with like how thick Andrew Luck has gotten in the past like couple months. Honestly, that's probably the most promising part. I know that sounds goofy, but on Colts Twitter, man, we are absolutely drooling at like how well he's being built just like from his weight training. And I mean, it seems like his shoulder's, I don't know, getting there. I mean, it's tough to know exactly. And, you know, there's so many people saying things, but I mean, he's moving his shoulder and like little things, like, for instance, he was like picking up a kid at like some like Colts camp or something like that a couple of days ago. And he was like picking up a kid with one arm with his right arm, throwing arm. So like, all right, his shoulder's probably fine. Like, and it's fine. Like, you take the long road. So as long as it works, and as long as, you know, my baby boy goes back under center with a fully healed right arm.
And I just want it to be known that as a fellow AFC South rival, that I have been, if somehow Andrew Luck doesn't come out of this and he just like his career ends up just kind of fizzling away as we know it.
Yeah.
I just want it to be known that even though I'm a Jags fan, I am extremely angry at the Colts organization for ruining a generational talent like Andrew Luck. Like being robbed, exquisite football play from a quarterback.
Yeah, I'll probably question my fandom if he never plays like quarterback again. Like, he legitimately could be the middle, like there's no starting middle linebacker right now. For the starting middle linebacker for the Colts right now is Antonio Morrison, who's arguably the worst linebacker in the league, and Sky Moore, who's an undrafted free agent out of South Carolina. So Andrew Luck could legitimately play linebacker for this team right now. So that's always a consolation prize.
Now, besides Andrew Luck, and we know that they're obviously high on Brissett if he doesn't come back, but looking at the rest of the roster, as you get into training camp, preseason, like, what are some of the battles that people are going to need to look out for?
Well, the Colts front seven, specifically the defensive line, like, there's a ton of bodies there that are going to be battling out. I know a lot of news happened when they released Jonathan Hankins. You know, he was a really good player. But Jonathan Hankins is yet to be signed. So how good exactly was he? He didn't really fit into the scheme. But thinking about players like Marcus Hunt, who performed extremely well in the snaps that he played, Al Woods, Grover Stewart, who was an athletic freak coming out of Albany State, who was a rookie last year, Hassan Ridgeway, a draft Twitter favorite, Jabal Sheard, and John Simon will be rotating snaps, Terrell Basham, who was the day two pick last year, and then the two rookies that they took this year, Tyquan Lewis and Kamoko Ture, and they signed Denico Autry out of Oakland. So, like, that's like eight or nine people that are going to be rotating on that front end. And so you can see exactly, they literally are copying, or at least trying to copy and emulate what the Eagles did. And, like, sure, none of those players are high-caliber players. You know, Jabal Sheard's up there, and I think, you know, Al Woods and Hassan Ridgeway can be solid starters and you know Marcus Hunt shows some flashes, but that's a lot of talent that's fighting, and at least on defense, that's the one like position battle, like where you know whoever wins it, they're going to win it because there's a ton of competition, and you're going to feel very strong and faithfully about who wins those battles.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're in the land of hypotheticals and things that will probably not happen because you're really deprived of football.
This time last year, Chris came out and said that Calais Campbell was going to have four sacks in
2017. Four plus sacks. There's a plus. There's a plus on that tweet, and he ended up breaking my prediction in the first game. So kudos to Calais. I also said that the defense would be drastically better, and they were. So
well, yeah.
You can't prove any of this because that account's gone. So
that's like saying tomorrow's a day that ends in Y. Like yes, after you sign Calais Campbell and AJ Boye, your defense better be better.
I mean, I said drastically better. I mean, I got almost
yes, drastically.
Like
yes,
I had AJ yes. getting 6+ interceptions, Jalen 5+, and they all met my expectations. But speaking of hypotheticals, we'll have two scenarios. What do you think the Colts' record will be with Andrew Luck at the helm, or without Andrew Luck and it's Jacoby Brissett starting again?
With, you got to go anywhere between 8 and 10 wins. I'd probably go 10 just because, this is the best offensive line he's ever had, he's ever played with. This is the best coaching that he's ever had. So I'd go 10-6. And without, this may seem a little high, but I'd say 6-10 just because they went 4-12 last year. And like they literally were the unluckiest team in NFL history. Like, this has been well documented from everyone, especially you know people who are much smarter than us talking football at Football Outsiders and football guys. I know they were talking about it on their podcast. The Colts literally were the unluckiest team, or maybe not unluckiest is the word, but the fact that they lost the games that they did is just like so mind-blowing. I think it was 9 games that they had a halftime lead in, and they won I think 3 of those. One was a comeback victory. So like they literally can't perform worse is kind of what I'm going at. So I'd say Jacoby Brissett at the helm, I'd say 5-11, 6-10. With Luck, I'll say an optimistic 10-6.
What? I was going to say. Go ahead.
No, you can go. I had a different topic, so I'll bring that up after.
Well, speaking on staying on records, I was not as generous as you guys. I actually, in fact, had you guys doing worse than you did this year, which this was pre-draft. Maybe this was post-draft that I made this.
Well, I don't know if the draft makes that much of a difference. Like I said, the Colts, I mean, Quentin Nelson is big, but like, there's no real other huge playmakers. And, you know, part of me is reluctant because, you know, maybe the Jaguars don't regress. Obviously, they're a big regression candidate this year just because, you know, it's a popular pick. You know, maybe the Titans improve and you know, Deshaun Watson, if he continues to play like God, then yeah, the Colts would clearly be the fourth best team in the division. But like, there was just no way to get worse from last year. The offensive line is better. The playmakers are better. The defensive front. The back seven is like probably one of the youngest back sevens in all the NFL. But the pass rush looks better. And like I said, just the way that they lost so many games last year because of Chuck Pagano, like that's got to be at least 2 wins in my opinion, mm-hmm. just because I've seen it so many times.
I think definitely for the Colts this year that there's like any record prediction you get, you could probably put an asterisk next to it just kind of because coaching did have a huge effect. And we saw that with the Jaguars going from Gus Bradley to Doug Marrone, just how different everything looked throughout the season, the coaching differences, the even just things like going for it on fourth down when you should, when you shouldn't.
And that's Frank Reich's bread and butter is like the aggressive play that like timing his situations to get the most out of them.
Because it won the Eagles a Super Bowl. So
yeah.
I mean, we'll go with that. I mean, Nick Foles and the underdogs, and they were able. I mean, how many teams, if the Patriots lost, I mean, maybe if they had Garoppolo still, but if the Patriots lost Brady, they're not pulling a Matt Castle again. With Matt Castle, I guess he is in Foxborough again. Mm-hmm. like, how many teams could you really see, like the Eagles did, lose their superstar quarterback at the end of the season and still chug it out through the playoffs and win a Super Bowl? And I think that really comes down to Frank Reich, because, I mean, he just really he knows how to play quarterbacks, and I think that's going to be really helpful for Jacoby Brissett this season, really building the offense around him if he has to start, or if Andrew Luck comes back, being able to use all the generational tools and talents that Andrew Luck has.
Yeah, and like I, it was after the Browns game where the Colts won, where I was really high on trading Jacoby Brissett, because that was when everyone thought Andrew Luck was coming back. And at that time, like, people in the NFL were saying, like, a day two pick. I mean, you know, that was music to my ears. But after then he started to regress, and, you know, it seemed like you weren't really going to get anything for it. And Jacoby Brissett is like the literal perfect backup quarterback in the league, because he showed he has, you know, minor starting capabilities behind the quarterback who's had recent injury history, and he's still on his rookie contract making, you know, next to nothing and with a potential high trade value within the next 2 years. So, yeah, we absolutely love Jacoby Brissett and really glad we kept him.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess that'll pretty much wrap it up. I forgot to ask one thing during the free agency period. You know, based on 4 years of having him, what Dante Moncrief offers, and that can't be a good way to start it. Jags fans are a mixed bag on him. Some people think that he really sucks. Some people, myself included, I see the upside, but like the more I look at the contract numbers, it's like, why? So I'm curious for a Colts fan's perspective on Dante Moncrief.
Well, it was after his second year, Matt Harmon at NFL.com wrote a piece that says, like, Dante Moncrief is, like, this, you know, the NFL's next breakout star at wide receiver. And I can't remember. Matt writes, like, this one piece every year. And the year before, I can't remember which wide receiver he picked, but, like, he nailed it right on the head. And Moncrief, I think, had, like, 7 touchdowns and, like, not in like 14 games or something that year at like a ridiculous pace. And so then I kind of wrote my own piece on him. Like, I went back and like I went through all of his contested catches that he had in the end zone. Like, he just made some like spectacular grabs. I was like, remember this guy ran a 4.4 40 at, you know, 6.3 coming out of Ole Miss, and you know, he was getting these like great separations off receivers. I was like, this is the year. And like, I was pounding the table for him, and then, you know, then Luck got injured with his lacerated spleen. And then the year after, when Luck was healthy, Moncrief got injured. And he still caught like 6 touchdowns in 9 games. And so then everyone was like, okay, this is finally the year. And it just never happened with him and Luck. And I felt like if they both had a season together, he'd probably catch like 12 touchdowns and like 1,000 yards. But he just really struggled with separation recently. And right now he's like probably like a low-end wide receiver 3 who can get you red zone. I mean, he's a phenomenal red zone target, but he doesn't really do anything between the 20s. And so that's why the contract numbers were so surprising, because it's like the opportunity cost of you paying someone that much to only work within 10 to 15 yards of the field really isn't worth it when you can, you know, essentially get that with a lot of other players. But, I mean, he fills a good role, but between the 20s, he just doesn't create any separation.
Well, that's news that Jaguars fans needed to hear, because it's been that's what I saw when I went back and watched him, is like I was really intrigued by the highlight plays that he was able to make, but I did realize like they were all red zone.
I still love Dante Moncrief. I mean, I'd feed Moncrief as like my Twitter name for like over a year. I mean he's a great guy. I love him, but just the numbers of that contract were a lot. I mean, I hope he performs well. I mean, he's got ridiculous athletic ability, but I'm glad the Colts didn't sign him for that cap number.
Well, they replaced him with a guy in Fountain who, you know, is kind of the same way, can be a big red zone target.
Yep.
Very athletic, but, you know, cheap.
Yeah.
fifth round cheap. Now we're worried about his injury concerns. They don't seem to be nagging in terms of repeat injuries to the same thing. But is it more of a fact that, like, he's just soft, or do you think that these are things he can get past?
Yeah, it's weird because, like, he's not a small wide receiver. I mean, like, physically, he's a god, and you wonder, you know, someone that fast, that strong, why they're dealing with it. And yeah, it just seemed like, you know, every other year kind of situation where, you know, whenever he was healthy, Andrew Luck was hurt. Whenever he was hurt, Andrew Luck was healthy. So, I mean, I wouldn't put it as like a red flag on him. I mean, it's obviously something to look at, but I think you'd worry more about what's going on in the field rather than, you know, just the injury parts of him.
Gotcha. Well, then I think that should pretty much do it for us. Chris, you have any last questions?
No, he's answered all my Colts-related questions.
Yeah, just one more thing I want to mention. Josh McDaniels is a snake. And, like, what he did to the Colts organization is, like, literally one of the most scumbaggiest, that's not even a word, it's one of the worst things, like, I've ever seen anyone do to any organization ever. Like, he literally announced the press conference to be the head coach of a football team and then went back to the New England Patriots. Like, it literally, I still am not over it. I know I should be, but I'm not. He's such a snake and a scumbag.
We're happy that he's not the Colts head coach, not because we're scared of him, mm-hmm. but because we feel like you deserve better. Well, then that should pretty much do it for us. Brian, go ahead and give yourself a shout out. People can find you on Twitter. Just plug yourself. Go ahead and let the people know everything about you real quick.
I mean, I guess you want to. It's at bkrosky19. Just FYI, I am getting rid of this account soon. So, I mean, if you just want to follow. For the meantime, I'm just sending off these tweets about the Colts. A lot of pictures about Andrew Luck. And his pecs and his shoulders and his thighs. So if that's the kind of thing you're into, yeah, happy Krosky 19. I'm a reasonably cautious and optimistic Colts fan.
Well, Brian, thank you for joining us tonight. It was a great convo, and I'm sure we'll get you back on in the future when we've got the Colts coming back on. The Locked On Colts account is incredibly vacant and has been since I started with the network, so... If you want that job, I'm sure I can get it for you. But if not, we'll just plan on having you on as a non-Locked On friend of the podcast.
No, that's good. Jaguars Twitter arguably is the best. No, it's not arguably. You guys are the best community by far on Twitter.com, and really appreciate all you guys, even some of the annoying people. But you guys are really funny, and love having good combos with you guys.
You're about to get a lot of Jaguars follows.
I told Ryan Day I was going to make fun of him on this, but it looks like we ran out of time for that.
I mean, this is a Mike's... welcome Ryan Day. Like,
no, that's good.
We'll save that for the first week that the Jags and Colts play each other.
All right, that's good. I'll take that.
We'll get Ryan on here for a roast Ryan session.
Ryan Day hate week.
All right, I'm good with that. Thanks, guys.
All right, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts at this point. You can find us on there at Locked On Jaguars. Follow the Locked On Jaguars handle on Twitter. Check out the website. Got a lot of content coming out over there. Despite it being the dead season, we're trying to get film breakdowns out there and try and keep you guys updated with news. So be sure to throw pretty much everything you can, a follow, subscription, or a bookmark, whatever it takes. Keep you guys updated with Locked On Jaguar stuff, and we will be back with you guys later this week.